And welcome to episode number 6 of Studio 526M, the digitally authentic show of rants, raves, and reviews, all packed concisely for digitally minded students, faculty, or industry professionals. I am your host, Professor Michael Harper, along with my new co-host, Vivara Jones. How are you today?
Most excellent, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. We are recording from my office, 526M, on the beautiful Utah Valley University campus of Orem, Utah. And on today's show, we've got some outstanding topics to discuss today. On segment one, we actually are going to be covering modular phones. That is going to be Vivara. How did you come up with that topic anyway?
It's been a while since we actually seen news about a group coming up with things that are different and how you can upgrade or mess with your phone without necessarily buying a new phone. And it looked really fun.
And you're all about this, right?
I am about this.
Okay, we're going to cover that. Hold on, hold on. She's okay, all like just raring to go here. and then she's also going to have Termology. I have segment two. We're going to be talking about CarPlay versus Android Auto versus Windows in the car. And so that ought to be a little bit fiery. And anyway, we look forward to going over this second episode with a new co-host. Our first co-host was Jaron Pulver, and now we have Vivara Jones. This episode is sponsored again by the Digital Media Program here at Utah Valley University and also our own UV Radio Club. They're hot on the trails of doing some pretty amazing things as they build that out, and so we want to support them. If you're listening to this episode on iTunes or iOS 8, you can click and go right out to the stream and listen to your heart's content. But before we get into our segment, we have Newsstand. And the topic I've decided to cover today on Newsstand is very near and dear to my heart, at least in one sense. I work on Mac OS X. Well, Windows has decided in their infinite intelligence, I don't know where they come up with this, but now we move from Windows 8.1 and we move directly to OS 10. What the heck happened to 9? Seriously, what is the deal, Microsoft? You're confusing a lot of people. We go from Windows ME 98, 98 SE, XP. Gosh, you just, what do you guys do with your names? Vista, where'd that come from? Seriously? I thought you were on a roll here with Windows 7, Windows 8, and then you got to 8.1, and now we're at OS 10. I have no idea who does your naming. Seriously. Now, I know a lot of people who have been on different sites. They've said it's not a big deal. It makes perfect sense. It's not, who cares? It matters because their strategy has to be clear and concise for consumers. And it also demonstrates why they're lacking in so many other markets. It's at least my opinion. If they can't name things properly and create a cohesive marketing and branding experience, how can you create products? Anyway. You know what, guys? You can go on to our Facebook page and you can just drill me all you want on this opinion. But I expect that you have a good comeback, something factual, something that really makes sense instead of, who cares, or it makes perfect sense. No, I want some really good feedback.
And in our mobilist segment today, we will be talking about modular phones. If you've never heard about them before, you might just as well get interested because a new wave is coming and it's fantastically promising looking. So what's a modular phone? It's a tablet kind of thing. It's a bag that you connect all your parts to. You can pick whatever you like. You can have as much or as little memory as you want. You can have as a good camera as you want or as bad as you want. You don't care to have a camera, don't put it in at all. So basically, it's a pick-and-choose buffet of a phone, and the only stopping point for you is how much you can pay for it.
Which is a big sticky point.
It is a big point because, I think, actually, it all will depend on the manufacturers, how they will cater, but those of us who are technology nerds and aficionados will spend a lot of money on that if it works well.
Well, the question is, will we spend more money on modular phones than we already have?
There's another challenge for them, how they'll price it, if they price it right.
True.
And if it will be cheaper for the rest of us, cheaper than Apple and other big brands, then it will probably really fly off, because I can just see it blooming out. Because the promise of, well, let me give a little background. It started with a small group of guys who called it Era Project, and it was just really something they wanted to do to make money. And then Google saw them and bought their project. Now it's Google's property, and they're developing it. And their promise, at least to the community, is that they're not going to hold it to themselves. They're not going to make all the parts themselves. They're going to open it to anyone who wants to manufacture the parts and make it a competitive market, at least in that sense.
And that was from Kickstarter, wasn't it?
Yes, it was actually a Kickstarter project, which is amazing, which brings the question how the Kickstarters are going to get their money back now. But
well, didn't they already get their money back if they got it bought out from them?
I suppose. That's an interesting
if it's Google,
thing.
I mean, that's a lot of money.
Exactly.
Right.
Either way, I feel like this will be something fun and new. For a long time, the phones were one piece, whether it was the very old flip phone or what we have as smartphones right now. It's still one piece. You can do nothing about it. The best you can do is change your micro SD card and make your memory bigger, and that's all you get.
You're talking about present-day phones.
Exactly.
Right
now, nothing. You can't customize unless it's pre-built for you. You don't get to decide, oh, maybe I want this better processor instead, and this camera, or this processor and this screen capability. But I just feel like it'll be fun. We'll be able to keep going, have the same back of our phone, the same base, the processor, but not have to upgrade it every 2 years or so.
So basically, you're creating the PC world, the original PC world, which was under like Microsoft, that you can put new card in, you can do all these things. But I guess the question is, what type of negative things come out of this? And I don't mean to be negative. Well, yeah, I do. I want to bring it out.
Well, it's fair enough. There are pros and cons to everything, and it's always necessary to consider the cons.
Oh, what are the cons then? I mean, it sounds great to be able to just kind of put whatever you want, but what did we get when we had the Windows world? We still have it, but, you know, Macintosh got nailed early on, people saying, oh, you're just closed. You're a closed system. You'll never survive. Well, they have. They have a particular niche. But what cons do we see that can come from this, whether it's business or whether it's from hardware-software integration or even just from consumer business models?
Those are excellent questions. I think that as we possibly get that product out in the market, there will be many disbelievers, so to say, in it. Because, first of all, as the prototype is right now, according to Google's video, the parts seem to very easily slide out. Are they going to be very safe to use? Are they going to be sturdy or not? Because that's a big concern. If I break my $200 part,
sure,
are they going to cover it for me or not? And then the software. With multiple manufacturers, are they going to talk to each other and make sure everything is consistent in the way they make it? And is it going to work well with one part from one manufacturer, or the whole system will crash down if someone else's work was sloppy enough?
It's like the PC driver issue.
Exactly.
We've got to have all these drivers working in the system.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, no, that's incompatible. I mean, inherently, that's gonna have to be part of this. Because
precisely.
Well, and I guess in many ways, Google is probably the company to actually do this, because they already have so many manufacturers they're having to work with, which is by design, right?
Exactly.
And so I can see that. I guess the flip side then is what happens to Apple, because they'll never, I can't see a day where Apple will create these modular pieces unless it's Apple designed modular pieces.
That was my question as well when I first heard about it. Is Apple going to come in and play with everyone else, or are they going to keep being the shout out, so to say, which they keep doing anyway? But I think it'd be fun if everyone chimed in and just provided for everybody, because people who love Apple to the point of fanaticism, exactly. Excuse me, my English. They will not step away to play with this technology unless Apple provides them the parts, which is another, you can lose that market if you don't cater to them.
Well, Apple's point of view, though, on this would be, we craft these machines
exactly,
so that they are fine-tuned and we know that they work.
Exactly.
Right? And now, to be fair, for Apple, I'm an old guy, right? I'm not that old. I'm only 45. You know, I got gray hairs. But, you know, the idea is that when I started back in early 90 with my Mac Classic, and all the way through the 90s, people were saying, oh, they're going to go out of business. They're going to go out of business. Mm-hmm. Well, they're not going out of business anytime soon. They've been a huge, ever since Steve Jobs returned, they've been leading the industry in designs with iPads and iPods, you know, iPhone, all these things. And most people don't realize they're the only computer manufacturer from that original set during the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're the only computer manufacturer left, and they never opened up. So maybe it's true that, you know, I think it's about markets. It's about choice and about people who want to build certain things. I don't see Apple entering that market. But then there's the other side of it, which is Google has a tremendous opportunity here to really commoditize a whole new industry and a whole new model. I feel kind of sorry for companies maybe like Samsung, LG, HTC. Unless they're building these parts, they're kind of going to be left on the sidelines. They're going to have to change their whole business philosophy, if you think about it, because it's not going to fit the standard model.
Precisely. But that's one of their open points right now with Google. They are really wanting to get everyone involved. It's their project, but they want to play with everyone else, so to say.
Sure.
And one of the goals of that project, as to my understanding anyway, is there are so many people who can't afford a smartphone, and they really want to make it happen for the rest of the world to be able to get that access to the internet and to communication with this project, so they can just maybe buy the cheapest they can afford, but it will still work well for them, and they'll be able to fix it up if the need comes up for cheap, not for rip your arm and the leg off.
Yeah, but I see it from both sides of the equation, though. You can see someone buying cheaper components, still building a decent phone. But then you also have the ability for geeks like us to be able to take it from the opposite side and actually spend a lot of money, potentially a lot of money,
for sure,
but on the components that we want, right? And so it really has scalability in terms of how you treat the modules. So it could be somebody who might be in a third world country buying a very cheap phone with these cheaper modules, still getting a good phone. But then there's the other side where you've got your first, you know, your first world countries that have lots of money and people have large economies. I mean, take China, for example.
They're catching up.
At that point, they're a very technical people. And for them to have all of these different modules, I mean, that will probably fly very well there.
And that actually brings up another con with the parts becoming cheaper and everyone invited to pitch in, the quality assurance will have to be really high, and
That's true. Consumers
will be responsible to pick their own parts and check where they're buying them from.
Well, yeah. you have a lot of faith in the consumer market, do you not?
I don't, but I'm just saying they would have to, because you will never know sometimes when it will come from.
Well, and you think about embedded viruses,
precisely,
malware, let's just call it malware.
Malware.
Just kind of keep the whole thing open. You know, Android's got a terrible track record
with
malware. I mean, it's bad. And most people don't recognize how bad it is because I'm that same point that you had. They're not keeping track of what's going on in their systems. Now, I know my Android friends will be like, oh, Mike, you're just making a big deal about nothing. No, it's a big deal when you've got 99% of all malware on Android.
Yes.
So
part of it comes from an average person who buys a phone or a computer or whatever. They don't know how to check what's going on, and they don't care, really.
Sure.
But somehow, when it starts malfunctioning for them, that's not their first concern to ask what they're doing on their part. But
yeah.
Anyway.
But at the other end of the spectrum, though,
exactly,
is I have my son, for example. Now, this is like a dream come true for him.
For sure.
Oh, my gosh. Are the next generation of kids that are junior high right now, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth graders, when this starts to really take off, because I don't think there's any doubt that if it's going to, it's really a matter of when, right?
When.
And we look at maybe what? What are you thinking?
I think it's actually starting to roll out next spring.
That's
their projection. They confess that it's really a tight schedule to accomplish such a big feat.
Sure.
But they're really cranking it up.
But let's say it's in 4 years. We have things really
going,
being fairly mature in 4 or 5 years. That's when my son graduates from high school. That's that target market. And you know, he's an Uber geek. and this really will be attractive to him. And I think that that's probably one of the coolest things of all is that it does provide choice. And it will provide a great opportunity, not only, I mean, if you think about the iPod market and iPad market with cases and all these different things, that's basically what it is.
Yep. And that's one of their other things that they're pursuing, that parts will be, you can custom order your parts, make them look however you want. And another nifty feature they're looking at accomplishing right now is you won't have to turn your phone off to switch out a part. Even a battery. You can just take your empty battery and put maybe your spare one in.
My
nuclear battery, exactly. But it just looks like so much fun. I do see how it can downfall in a heartbeat if it doesn't work right in the end. But it's kind of promising and fun and different, and I really wanted something different in the latest couple of years because nothing's going anywhere, but this kind of...
And we should remind our listeners that this is an episode, an enhanced episode. And if you're on iTunes or on one of your iOS devices, you can actually see the picture of this. Most of you probably would have figured that out by now. But we have a couple pictures of some of the modular phones as we're going through this. So you'll want to make sure you look at that. But yeah, very cool.
Sounds
very
fun.
Very cool.
I'll be looking forward to that a lot.
Well, so will I. This will be a lot of fun. Thank you, Vavar. That was awesome.
Well, you're most welcome. On our Termology today, we're going to be talking about material design. You ask, what is material design? Well, according to Google, it's a visual language for users that synthesizes the classic principles of good design and the innovation and possibility of technology and science. So, it sounds like it's a lot to take in. And frankly, when you read about it, you kind of get a feeling that even they don't know what they're talking about. But when you give it a few goes and read through all the materials they release to the general public, it just seems like they really want to figure out a new way for people to design, not just for the technology that we have right now, but also the technology we'll have in the future. In Google's view, maybe someday we'll have other surfaces than touchscreens and other glass surfaces to view our digital content on. Maybe one day our pixels will have some depth and we'll have paper-like substances to play with digital content. That would be exciting, but as of yet, it does not exist. However, right now they just want everyone to prepare and get together and just remember to use the best principles in design, combine it with what we have in CSS and other technologies, and just be ready when that future comes.
And on this DevBox segment, we're going to be diving into CarPlay, Android Auto, and Windows for the car. A lot of us haven't really thought too much about how our platforms are going to integrate into our cars. Well, at least from the standpoint of iOS 8, Android, and, for example, Windows Phone. Most of us have cars that have integrated solutions by Ford or by Pontiac or Hyundai or BMW. These are all systems that exist today. They're integrated and they're embedded onto the systems. And the car manufacturers are responsible for actually developing all of these components. And the software and the integration of iOS devices, for example, is just a plug-in and it works along with it, but it's not an integrated solution. Well, along comes Apple, and they decide, okay, we want to do something with the car. We know we need to do something with the car. Microsoft, for example, had already been working with Ford with their Sync program, and that was not going too well. There are stories of, for example, the one that I love the most, Vavara, and I think I even said it in class, and maybe it was in our adaptive interface design class. I don't remember, but the guy's in L.A. He's like along Sunset Strip. Lots of cars, gets to the turn lane, and it goes into error mode, like blue screen of death. And he calls up Ford, and he's like, what am I going to do? And they say, okay, here's your reset. Open the car door, you know, do this sequence. So close the car door, open the car door again. He's going, you got to be kidding me.
I'm on the freeway.
That's our new reset sequence. And so, you know, the experience with Sync hasn't gone really well. But I think what it did is it exposed a flaw, at least in the thinking that Microsoft, Apple, Android, even Blueberry, needed to actually be the source of all things car, meaning the integrated system. Mm-hmm. Now, let's be fair, Blueberry, they have the QNX system, and that is what controls the majority of embedded car systems. Most people don't know that.
I didn't know that.
It's an open source software package, an operating system that they can use, they can license, and then utilize. But it hasn't gone so well. So along comes Apple, and they say, all right, we need to think differently about this this process. Do we want iOS to be embedded in a car? Well, they could do that. Obviously, they could do that. Basically, you would be like your phone, and it could control it.
Mm-hmm.
And they stepped back from the problem and said, why should we do that? Well, there are several problems with that. Just the fact that they would have to then license the operating system to these manufacturers, and then the manufacturers would then have to fine-tune it and do all the other stuff. And Apple's not going to do that because they tried that many moons ago with clones of the macOS system, and that was completely killed once Steve Jobs got back. And it opens up your company to a slew of problems.
Exactly.
So they said, no, we're not going to do that. So what is the solution then, right? If people also had embedded systems, they may say, well, I'm not going to buy that car. So the car manufacturers have to look at this and say, why would we use iOS?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are people going to say, I don't want iOS.
I don't want an Apple
car. And then there's the whole interface thing. If I've got a phone or I've got some other device that needs to integrate with it, now I'm dealing with all these different interfaces, which is going to happen regardless. So Apple, when they talked about it last summer at the Worldwide Developers Conference last summer, and they kind of brought CarPlay out to the public, they did some basic demonstrations. It was still in its infancy in terms of public view. I mean, it had been going along for years. I mean, Google and Microsoft and Apple, they have these projects going along for a long time. And then we see the public view and we're like, oh, wow, that's new. No, that's about 4 or 5 years old.
That's new for the public.
That's new for the public. So Apple's point, or at least their goal here, was to say, all right, if we have a phone, everyone has a phone, everyone has a device, and just like our adaptive design class, it wasn't just about adapting to a screen resolution like responsive. Remember that? We had been talking about the difference between adaptive and responsive. And the huge, huge brouhaha that gets going with people online, you know, these designers. Oh, no, that's what responsive and adaptive means. And we kind of stuck to another angle, which was, let's actually see if we can define it ourselves, right? And we decided to stay out of that brouhaha. Because we could. We were stuck in our class. And we finalized on this idea that adaptive really is about behavior, about changing people's behavior and about influencing people's behavior. And I think Apple kind of took that idea.
They were eavesdropping for sure.
They were definitely eavesdropping into our class. Their approach is to say they have a phone, they have a device already. Why should that device be given up in favor of something that's embedded? Why can't we just seamlessly integrate with this embedded system and they're allowed to use the system that they already understand?
Which would get them a lot more clients and customers.
Sure it would. And then it allows the customer not to choose a particular platform. They can just adjust the platform that they're already using in their phone, for example, and go along their merry way. And so that's what Apple did. CarPlay literally is an idea of taking your interface from your phone, connecting to the system that's already in the car, and there's an LED system, for example, a nice LCD screen, let's just call it that, and it basically projects that interface, that UI, up onto that screen. Now, when it syncs to that system and it starts working with it, it doesn't give you just the same screen that's on your iPhone. They limit it and they have a particular new way of working with that UI. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it's still an iOS experience. But it's a sheet. I like to kind of call it sheet because it just slides over the top of the existing embedded system. And then it is a unique system that is byproduct. So
exactly.
That's how Android now has gone to use, you know, what would we say? This is how Android now interprets the problem as well and the solution. I think Android or Google was looking at as Android as being an embedded system. They just came out, I believe it was March mm-hmm. of this year, and they ended up talking about Android Auto and how it was going to do the same thing. In January, we had Microsoft demonstrate some of this stuff. It wasn't January. It was actually during the Build conference. And so they also did the same thing. It was Apple in January that actually demonstrated more of CarPlay. And then it was the other two coming behind that. And, you know, Microsoft just said, this is just a proof of concept. And so they're way behind on this in many respects. But Android also, they're having to kind of play catch up a little bit with Apple on this. Although I think those two are actually neck and neck. But it's the same concept all the way through all three of these primary platforms.
Which is a good thing.
It is a good thing. And I think why do you think it's a good thing?
I think that if I always love the competition because it drives the progress. And if they keep doing things, whether separately or together, and kind of peeking over the shoulders of the other two guys, then they'll keep progressing faster and they'll come to something better in the end than just hiding in their caves and doing it on their own.
Well, and that's what we hope, right? We hope that competition drives innovation.
In my idealistic world, that's what will happen.
That's what will happen, right? I think that's the case here. I think the unique thing here is that we have some standardized technologies that are being employed in mm-hmm. these new car systems that are just about to be, some are already released, but by the end of this year, 2014, mm-hmm. Definitely by the time we get to the end of first quarter 2015, pretty much every car manufacturer will have all the new stereo components and all of those things that, you know, is going to be integrating this rolled out. And all of our phones will, you know, from iPhone 5, Nexus 5, Nexus 6, you know, some of the new Lumia phones with Windows, Windows phone operating system, those will all be ready to go. So
awesome.
I think it's really great that they're looking at standardized technologies in order to do this, which is in some ways is kind of weird for Apple because, you know, they usually are in some of these closed mm-hmm. Standards, or they try and create some of their own standards that other people won't follow.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt is awesome. It's a beautiful technology, and Intel actually mm-hmm. really is the one that built that, but Apple had a lot to do with it. But you don't see it rolling out on the Windows platforms in any major way, which is unfortunate. But in this case, I think with all three of these manufacturers mm-hmm. utilizing these standards, it really creates a wonderful opportunity for consumers.
Yeah, because it's hard to deal with all three, and well, not very many people deal with Windows phones other than computers and Microsoft, but it's just kind of frustrating that you'd have to, I can't use my phone in your car, even though maybe it has some fantastic thing that could help us along the road. But
well, and that's a good point. I think that's one of the really key features here is that it's not set up by owner. If you are in a car and you have all three platforms, all three can actually work on that same system.
And it just would make me feel more liberated and just going wherever I want. Do I have to rent a car? Okay, whatever. Do I have to buy a new car? Okay, whatever.
Yeah. And no, that brings up another excellent point, which is it's not just new cars that'll have these new technologies that will enable these three platforms to work seamlessly. You can also get Alpine and Pioneer third-party products to put into your older car.
Oh, that's exciting.
And that's really great. They've really, it's Alpine and Pioneer that have done most of everything so far with CarPlay.
All right.
But I'm obviously, they'll be working with the other platforms as well because it's standardized technology. But I think that's a really unique thing because now if you've got a 2013 model, which isn't that old, right,
mm-hmm.
and you want to have those capabilities, you can swap out your radio system and your media system, let's call it that, and you can actually have CarPlay or Android Auto or Windows in the car work seamlessly. So that's really cool.
Well, here's an interesting question. How do you think one or the other will manage to sell more than the other guys? What will they have to do to differentiate their product for the better?
Well, that's a good question. I think I would answer it this way. They really don't need to do anything because It's not necessarily that they're selling a media center or anything like that.
That's
it's
true.
Just an extension of your mobile device. That's the beauty of it. You're just extending your mobile device and the interface while it's accustomed to adapt to that system.
Mm.
It's not responsive. Okay.
Okay.
Those are those two.
Exactly.
Those two terms that we covered in our class. Responsive in this case would be my screen's going to mirror and it's going to respond to the physical dimensions. That's not what it's doing. It's adapting to that system and saying, when I am in car mode, use this interface. The interface on the phone doesn't change. It's still visible. But
mm-hmm.
the bottom line is that it's adapting to that physical presence
mm-hmm.
on that car system. And it doesn't change. So they don't really need to sell it any different way. It's just an extension of your device. That's the kind of the cool thing.
Hmm.
So
I can see a few things where that could go.
Well, yeah, we'll find out what happens here shortly. We probably will see CarPlay released. I know it's supposed to be released at the end of this year. So we'll see whether that carries through, whether it will be the first part of 2015. Android Auto, they're really pushing hard because they don't want to lose any time to try and tackle Apple. They were a little bit behind there for a while, but they've made up ground. They're saying end of this year. Microsoft, we still have no word on when they're actually going to send their stuff out, which is unfortunate because I actually have a Windows phone, and I love the Windows phone. I keep telling students that. I think it's a great experience, and I've actually looked forward to seeing and I have seen it, you know, online, and we discussed it in our other class during the summer, our interaction design
mm-hmm.
class. We actually did a project on these three.
Oh, awesome.
And people were looking at the user interfaces and the implementation with what little information we had. And they came up with some all types of crazy different things. But we had a really hard time trying to figure out where Microsoft was going to go. But I really do like, everyone loved how the Microsoft system looked because it mirrors their Windows Phone
mm-hmm.
system with the Live Tiles. And it just looked great, but they're just behind, and they really run the risk of just being that third man out, just
exactly.
kind of clean up.
Yeah, they'd better start caring a little more, because otherwise they just kind of start looking old and behind everyone else,
well,
for sure.
They missed the boat on the phones.
Yep.
They missed the boat on the tablets.
Yep.
And it looks like they're behind again on the
cars. I'm not
sure
about the tablets because the Surface is catching up. But
the tablet, though, now we're on to something else.
All right, I'll stop.
I have
right
the
there.
RT machine right here. RT is a different beast altogether, but you notice the Surface Pro is not a tablet anymore. They've taken a different approach.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like their approach with the Surface Pro 3.
Sure.
I really do. But what do we classify it as? It's not like a standard tablet like an iPad or a Nexus 7 or anything
that.
So, you know, they're trying to find their way. And to be honest, the Surface Pro 3 is an excellent package. It
mm-hmm.
really is. But it doesn't fit some of those. But they were still late to the game. They were
yep.
still late trying to figure out what to do.
Yep.
Anyway, I just see a lot of great positive things happening. The last thing on this, then, is the user experience. We, in class, like I said, in the summer, we had our interaction design class. And we really took a lot of the photos, a lot of the screenshots and the different things, even looked at video on YouTube of people using the systems, and it was really apparent that none of them are finished yet. That was item number one. Number two, there are some serious user interface issues that students pointed out with the Android system. One of them being, for example, it's very bright.
Mm-hmm.
With white backgrounds, for example, on the map, and it's very, very minimalistic, which is good.
It would be really hard to drive at night.
That's right. And the students picked that up like that. I mean, they were going, you've got to be kidding me. Did they not think about night driving? Now, we don't know if there's a night option or whether it will automatically have a sensor.
Okay.
We don't know that. But the students were taking it from what we knew, and they started picking out all types of things on all three of them. There was no question. All three have little things here and there that need to be dealt with. But definitely they felt that the CarPlay was more polished and ready to go, even though it had some areas that they had concerns with.
It's just something to be expected from Apple.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we expect. We'll see what happens. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, with the Apple Watch, we'll have to see how all of this stuff integrates with this CarPlay. And obviously it will have integration. We didn't see that at the Apple Watch event, but we know that there will be integration happening. So, I just see great things happening. And for students here, as we do our interaction and design emphasis within our web design and app development program, I just see great opportunities for our students as we start to delve into these other mobile experiences.
There's no end to them. It's only barely started. We're nowhere near even in the middle of it. I love it.
Isn't it cool?
It is cool.
It's like when students say from other parts of campus, does anyone ever like come up to you and say, well, what's your major?
And then you tell them
and like, oh, what do you do?
Yes, they do give you that look and they have no idea how fun and amazing it is.
And what's your response?
Oh, I do a lot of things.
Okay.
What don't I do?
Well, my response is always, I just get to have fun all day.
That's for sure.
Which is really true. I get to have fun all day. I mean, we're in my office right now doing a radio show, and this is what we get paid to do, right? This is awesome. So anyway, Bavar, it's been fun having you on this episode. That concludes episode number 6 for Studio 526M, and it's been a great pleasure having you on for the first time as a co-host, and we look for you in other episodes to do great things. And that wasn't that bad, was it?
No, I love it. You were actually pretty good.
You weren't really that nervous. That was awesome.
I'm good with people.
Well, we'll continue to polish things off as you get used to being on the mic and recording. And anyway, it's a lot of fun.
Okay. But again,
for the sponsors of the show, the Digital Media Program, once again at Utah Valley University, which we've been talking about just recently.
Whee!
And also our UV Radio Club and the great things that they'll be doing in the future. Once again, please go to our Facebook page. Obviously, if you're listening to this and you're on an iTunes-capable desktop or iOS, you'll see the link there. Please go visit our page, not Digital Media UVU. That's our digital media page, but it's Studio 526M, as well as Twitter. The handle there is at Studio 526M. Please go there and start to participate. And as usual, we'll continue to start with our development of the website. We still have a long way to go. We want to get our shows out before anything, and then we'll get the website and all of the funness that goes there. Yes, it will. We got some great students to help develop that. But until next time, this is Mike Harper and Vivara Jones, and we will catch you on episode 7, where we introduce our third co-host.
Yay!
That'll be awesome.